Coming at you live from Syracuse, New York, it's The Real Deal Podcast with your host, Ian Phillips.
Hello, everybody. Once again, welcome to The Real Deal Podcast. My name is Ian Phillips. I watch movies. I write about movies. I talk about movies. I review movies. Basically, just about everything movies, besides, I don't know, actually making them. All right. It's March 27th, coming to you live from Syracuse, New York, in New House 2, the edit suites. We're students. This is what we get. Anyway, I've been... Oh, thank you. You're telling me it's 9 o'clock. Well, I've been... I'll give you a little background. I've been writing on The Real Deal, which I started when I was a sophomore in high school with a pretty crappy-looking blog, and I hope it's come a long way, writing a lot of reviews and other things, and I've decided to... take my voice to the radio waves, see what happens. I'd like to thank my producer, Nick. How's it going, Nick?
It's going great, Ian.
Great.
Thanks for having me.
Great. That's all we hear from you. You shut up now. Okay. So we're in, it's March, like I said, it's March 27th. And as a film watcher, this is actually very good for me, given that the months of January through February, maybe the beginning of March, is like a wasteland when it comes to movies because, you know, everybody's focused on the Oscars. All the studios got a campaign for that. So those are the dumping grounds. That's where you get I, Frankenstein and Hercules. Now it's the middle of March. We've got a new Wes Anderson movie out. We have a new Darren Aronofsky movie out this weekend, Noah, which I don't know what to make of it. It kind of looks like it could be like a really good movie that could have come out in January. But I have faith in Darren Aronofsky. Black Swan, The Wrestler is like two of my favorite movies of all time. We already have a Captain America coming out next week, so, and it's only April. It's like the summer season sort of beginning. I've actually haven't seen the first Captain America. I would like to go see Winter Soldier, so I think I'm going to go and check out that first Captain America now. There's been a pretty slow week for film news, but just really exciting for everything that's coming out. We had a Muppets movie last week. I saw that, Muppets Most Wanted. It was good. You know, the first Muppets movie that came out like a few years ago, well, not the first ever, but like the first of the new Disney Muppets since Disney owns the world. Well, it was really good. It was meta. It was chaos. Jason Segel was in it. The songs were amazing. I never realized I liked the Muppets that much until I saw that movie. And I got it. The new one was good. I enjoyed it. It's definitely not the first Muppets, called Muppets Most Wanted. I enjoyed the caper and a lot of the jokes. It has Danny Trejo dancing, so like that's a pretty positive thing. Yeah, that was good. Some interesting film news I like to talk about. It's not exactly related directly to film, but to people who review movies. So recently, Entertainment Weekly, if you're familiar with it, it's the magazine who now does most of their stuff online. Anyway, they're setting up a new format, completely new business model, where instead of just having, like, typically paying their reviewers and their writers and their bloggers, they're going to start having community posts, which is like what you see on BuzzFeed, the like 50 things you remember if you were born in the year 1993, like that kind of stuff that gets really high hits, but like you don't have to pay the writers anything to do it. So they're going to start doing that. And they're apparently going to pay people in what they call prestige. So basically, they'll be saying like, oh, we won't pay you, but this is your way to get your foot in the door for people to read your posts. And I'm very thankful for that part. The system's been very, it's like online's made writing a much more democratic system. It's allowed me to write on other websites and do things I normally wouldn't have been able to when I was like 19 years old, but like I gotta say, this is, it's a passion for me, but I don't want it to just be a hobby, and I'm sure all the other writers out there must feel like the exact same way. Like we gotta get paid sometime. I'm graduating soon, and I don't want to be an accountant. That's all I can say. I would love to turn this weird little obsession I've had into actual, I mean, I know it's possible. There are plenty of writers out there that do get paid. It's not like the end of the line. I'm not giving up hope. Like, the internet's changing everything, especially how writers are. Like, not right now. It's not great, but I think in a few years, it's going to be even better. I'm going to get some water. I've always wanted to do that to a mic, just, you know, make that little sound. No, no real reason to. How about a little TV talk? I'll call this Analog This, which is what I call the TV section on my blog, because analog, and, you know, I thought it was cool. Whatever. This is actually, you know, everyone's saying TV's, like, the best thing out there since sliced bread. Like, it's even kicking movies' ass in some aspects. It's pretty true. Just one thing I'd like to note first is that so many TV shows we watch now are actually based on movies. We've got Hannibal, Bates Motel, Fargo that's coming out. So if you want to diss movies, that's fine. There's plenty of I, Frankensteins out there, as I've said. But just remember that I don't think TV would be as good as it is today without movies. But anyway, a few big shows ended this week, which is now going to free up a lot of time in my schedule. Let's see, what ended this week? Girls had its season finale on Sunday. Tuesday was the season finale of Kroll Show, which, by the way, if you're not watching, it's really, really one of the funniest shows on TV. Really underrated. I don't know why it gets a bad rap. I don't know if some people have seen a few clips of it here and there, just watched some commercials, and that's what they're judging on. But I do think Nick Kroll's kind of a comic genius. Something like, it's amazing the amount of characters he can pull off in one episode, sometimes in just one sketch. It just feels like he's having a conversation with himself, not even like in like an Eddie Murphy Nutty Professor type thing. Like, it's really funny. There's a whole entire thing on it called Wheels Ontario, which is just making fun of Canadian people. And it's like, yeah, it's not that mean-spirited though, because it's very specific references, and you just like kind of like they really must have put their research in. Anyway, it's really funny. Also, another great Comedy Central show that ended on Wednesday for the season is Broad City, which is definitely the best new show of the season. It stars Abby Jacobson and Alana Glazer as Abby and Alana, who are two pretty broke girls living in, I mean, not, I meant like pretty, like they're fairly broke, but yes, they also are pretty, both those things. Yeah, they live in New York, and it's basically about their adventures, trying to live under budget, getting high, hooking up with guys, and it's like just every episode, it's like, I think it was originally sold as the female workaholics, but it's much more than that. It reminds me a lot of like Louis even. It's like very surreal. Like sometimes you don't even know if they're having a dream. It's basically, it started as like one thing the first episode, and just, I think there's been maybe 8 episodes, 10 this season. I'll fact check it later. It's really turned into something like completely else. I think season 2 is going to be even better. Brooklyn Nine-Nine also ended. There was a big stir in January when it won the Golden Globe for Best Comedy when it was only on the air for a few months. And it was like a mixed season, but overall, I really liked the ending. I won't give it away, but basically, I think in one season, they figured out what every character's place is. It's from Michael Schur, who, pretty sure that's right, but who also made The Office and Parks and Rec. Both those shows had a rough start. Brooklyn Nine-Nine's gotten into it really quickly. Terry Crews is amazing in it. So are all the other actors. Joe Latruglio, Andy Samberg's great. It was an emotional episode too. You'll just have to watch and see. Girls season three ended, and it was a great season. I was a little disappointed by season two. Girls season three, I could relate to it a lot. It's a lot about Hannah's struggle to be a writer and to maintain social life or friends and like get a real job. And I think they did really good. It's now, Broad City is a very good counterpart to Girls, for sure. All right, that's a TV talk for now. I think there's going to be a little lull in TV, but don't worry, because next weekend Game of Thrones is back on. And I know Nick probably, are you a Game of Thrones fan, Nick?
I love Game of Thrones.
I think everybody in Newhouse, in Syracuse, in the world, I think everybody loves Game of Thrones.
Winter is staying.
Yes, winter is staying. Winter is never leaving. It just, there was a snowstorm yesterday, and then it was warm today, and they're going to fuck with us, and it's going to be cold tomorrow. I really think this city is controlled by Ned Stark and whatever gods they worship. All right, well, take a break. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back with the Real Deal podcast. Hey, if you're just tuning in now, once again, my name is Ian Phillips. This is the Real Deal Podcast. And right now, we are going to get into our review of the week. This week, I am going to talk about Lars von Trier's Nymphomaniac. Nymphomaniac is split into two parts, Volume 1 and Volume 2. I watched both, wanted to review both separately, but then I realized it's almost impossible. It's not really like a Kill Bill situation where even the first one has a kind of like ending that stands on its own. You feel like when you're watching Volume 1 of Nymphomaniac, it's just starting in the middle of something even bigger. The reason was split into two parts because the original cut was something over 5 hours. So now we have something where each half is about 2 hours long. I watched one on a Saturday and one on a Sunday, so 2 hours each day, not bad. Nymphomaniac tells the story of Joe, which is a woman's name. She's played in her old age by, well, not that, like, 50. She's, like, age 50. She's played by Charlotte Gainsbourg. We first find her in an alley, beaten up and bloody. We don't know why, until she's discovered by a man named Seligman, who's played by Stellan Skarsgård. She doesn't want to go to the police. She doesn't want to go to the ambulance. She just wants to go. She just wants to rest. She's hiding from something. We don't know what. We'll find out. So Seligman takes her in, gives her some tea, and she reveals her whole story from him. This is an epic, a sex epic, a sexic, whatever you want to call it. It's 2001, A Sex Odyssey. It is about this woman's whole sex life from basically the age of birth. That's not the age. From birth to the age of 50. It's about her entire life. She's telling her story. She is, as she says, a nymphomaniac, which is different from sex addiction. According to her, I learned a lot from this movie. So Nymphomaniac is from director Lars von Trier. I actually haven't seen any of his movies, which is probably not a good thing for me as a reviewer. Von Trier has directed such films as Melancholia, Antichrist, Breaking the Waves, Dogville. Every time he's always met with a wave of praise and a wave of hatred. He's not somebody who wants to win everybody else over. His very European sensibility, it might work well. He's from Denmark. It might work really well overseas. In the U.S., there's always a mixed response, even though, you know, he shoots, I think most of his movies are shot in English. He uses a lot of American actors. Shia LaBeouf is in this, who's in real life has a whole recently plagiarism scandal, if you followed that. I'm not a big fan of his in real life, but like I think he really committed to this. He commits very hard. He plays a man named Jerome, who is Joe's first love and a continued love throughout her entire life. He has a very strange accent in it that seems like some form of British, but also just him talking in a deep voice. I'm not really quite sure what he was trying to go for, but he definitely, I think there's just a thing with a lot of child actors who want to stick up their middle finger at Walt Disney, at the Big Mouse, and do something completely the opposite, and this is what he's doing here. There's a lot of nudity, a lot of sex in this. That's not part of the review, that's just what happens. And it's a long movie, it's 4 hours, and when you make a movie like that, it's almost like you're trying to make something that's hit or miss. Like, I think the only way that a movie can really hit perfection, if it's like a solid hour and a half, hour 40, to me that, a clean hour and a half is my favorite runtime. If you want to do something that's over 3 hours long, you've got to earn it. I think Lars von Trier really does earn the runtime here. This is not a story that could be told in a simple 2 hours. Sure, he could have edited it down, but there's so much depth that would have been lost. And it's not even, Nymphomaniac's not really a conventional story either. It's, the whole story is just these two people having a conversation. And there's a lot of movies that start like that. You know, a character, you find them in a really compromising situation. They go and they say, I'm going to tell you everything. I'm going to tell you my whole story. And then you never go and visit them in the present day until the very end when it finally meets up there. Like kind of a Forrest Gump thing. What's interesting here is that it's about her life, but it's also about a conversation that Joe and Seligman have. He keeps trying to ascribe very deep meaning to her story. She's a very experienced woman, and he is a man who's very inexperienced in life. He's a reader, so he tries to apply religion and the Bible and even fly fishing to all of her stories. There's a very elaborate metaphor that's about her reeling in men, like a fisherman would reel in fish. But you know what surprised me? It's a very dark sex drama. It is. The two halves, they're different kind of in their mood. The first half and a little bit of the second half, really, it is very deeply funny at times. I guess depending on what you're expecting, on maybe how squeamish you are, like what you think is okay to watch. But there's like a very weird sense of humor to a lot of the sex scenes there. Lars von Trier gets a lot of the absurdity of it. There's a scene involving a three-way that I won't give away if you want to watch it and find it funny. But I could not stop laughing at it. There's also like a very, like there's a lot of different montages where she's describing and like you see how all of her experience mirrored the other. And it's very funny too. Like montages, you normally see them for movies like Rocky where the person is training and they're going to go and get really strong and eat, drink a lot of eggs and fight the Russians. But used for comic effect here, there's one whole montage where she tells, you see every man she sleeps with, she tells them, that was the first orgasm I ever had, and clearly it's a lie. And through that, there's a humor to it, and you kind of learn a lot about her as well. What do I have next? That was a lot of thoughts right there, Nick. So overall, then its second half, the movie gets very dark. There's some S&M, it's brutal. Lars von Trier does not hold anything back, and I know there's a director's cut that's apparently even more, but that than what there is now. Like the first half would be 2.5 hours, but still, even I can't even imagine what that would be, because they really did not take that much out in the States. It is unrelentless. You see the difference between American and European film there, although there's a good amount of violence in this one. Overall, Nymphomaniac, I think it's a movie about a character who has who's a very experienced person. She lives life to the fullest. She could be a despicable character, but she's also a sympathetic character. She's an outcast. She has a problem that she truly believes she can't solve. She's a smart woman. She's an interesting woman. And if you don't like her, at least you're interested in her. If you, like, normally, Nymphomaniac is kind of movie, it's not like what you would normally see, and if you're into a new experience, I think it's worth it just for that, because it's not what you'd find in American cinema. It's weird, it's out there, it breaks a lot of rules, and like I said earlier, when we live in a time where everybody says that TV is taking over, that's where the daring work is done. We need people like Lars von Trier who can use the film format and make something this daring, this out there, like something we haven't seen before. Nymphomaniac, I think just Volume 1 now is out in limited theaters, so if you live in the Midwest, you're screwed. But there's very good news. I actually watched it on video on demand, and you can find both parts there now, and you can sit in the comfort of your own home in your underwear and watch a movie about a woman who's a nymphomaniac. Maybe. Yes. That's my producer, Nick, everybody. And anyway, that concludes the review section. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. Welcome back to the Real Deal Podcast, everybody. Unfortunately, this is the part where I say goodbye. Thank you so much for listening to my very first episode. It's crazy. I've always wanted to do a podcast my whole life, but finally I've gotten it together. I'd like to thank my producer, Nick, for helping me set this up and record this. If you'd like to read more of my work, you can check it out at realdealblog.com. That's real, R-E-E-L, deal, spelled the normal human way, blog.com. I write a lot of reviews. You could see more detailed my thoughts on Nymphomaniac. I also have reviews up of Muppets Most Wanted, The Grand Budapest Hotel. I have many other columns. Every once in a while, I find the weirdest movie props and set pieces and costumes I can find on eBay, and I write about it. I got to get another one of those up soon. Those are really fun to write. Anyway, you can look at that. If you have anything you want, any suggestions, anything you want me to review on the show, whether that be a movie new or old, a TV show, maybe you like me or you flat out hate me and want to find me and punch me in the face, don't do that. But instead, you could punch me in the face over the internet. Email me at Ian, I-A-N, at Real, once again, R-E-E-L, dealblog.com. That's Ian at realdealblog.com. Here we're going to do a little question of the week, a little thing to talk about. And if you're interested, you can email me your response. So recently I did a little column after finding out the news that Sofia Coppola would direct a new live action version of The Little Mermaid. I pitched about some directors who are known for more adult movies, like what would happen if they were assigned a Disney classic, which one would they do? I said Guillermo del Toro would do Beauty and the Beast, which is actually a real thing that's going to happen, which is awesome. I said that David O. Russell would direct Cinderella and that Quentin Tarantino would do Mulan. So if you have one you'd like to add to the list, please email it to me and maybe I'll even read it on the show. Thank you everybody for listening this week. Keep watching movies.